Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Monday, April 1st. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, HPV vaccines can help prevent one of the most common sexually transmitted diseases, but the rate of vaccinations in Mississippi are among the lowest in the nation. Then from the Gulf States newsroom, last March, a tornado tore through Rolling Fork. Residents of one mobile home park haven't been able to return. Their story ahead. Plus, the National NAACP is honoring a Mississippi woman for her part in holding the Rankin County Goon Squad accountable. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Doctors at the University of Mississippi Medical Center say getting HPV vaccines can help save lives. Human papillomavirus, or HPV, as you just heard me say, is the most commonly transmitted sexual disease in the U.S. Although Mississippi has the nation's highest rate of HPV-related cancer deaths, few Mississippians get the vaccine. Dr. Elizabeth Carr is executive director of the University of Mississippi Medical Center's Population Oral Health Collaborative. She says the collaborative includes dentists and aims to get the vaccine where it's needed most. Carr hopes getting a broad variety of healthcare providers on board will help.
HPV stands for human papilloma virus, and it is extremely common. We hear statistics that about 80% of the population is infected with a version of HPV, and there's over 200 strains of this virus.
That's a lot. How do you get it?
Basic life, most of it is. And some of the dangerous strains, the ones that cause head and neck cancer and cervical cancer, and it causes 7 different types of cancer, those are sexually transmitted. So skin-to-skin contact is typically what will transmit an HPV virus. And there's some that are very, very benign. They don't cause anything. You may, even if you get warts on your finger or on your toes or like a planter's wart on the bottom of your foot, all of those are strains of the HPV virus. It's just that there are different strains that cause different manifestations in the body.
But it doesn't have to be sexually.
That's correct. It's skin to skin. Be shaking someone's hand. That could be hugging someone and touching your cheek to someone who has a wart, or you know, maybe putting, you know, if someone has a wart on their hand and they hold your hand, you may get that transmitted in that method.
Why aren't people getting vaccinated in Mississippi? Have you been able to figure that out? Why the rates are so low?
One of the main pillars for the MPOHC is preventing head and neck cancers. And the prevention of this disease comes from the vaccine. So we have become very interested in the same question you just asked, Desiree, because why would people not get the vaccine if we knew? And we do know now, science has been very clear that if you get vaccinated before you are exposed to the HPV virus, your chances for having one of the 7 types of cancer that are caused by HPV almost go to nothing. It's just, it's such a wonderful thing to be able to say that you can get a shot that would prevent cancer. So we've been trying to figure out, why do people not do this? We think there's a lot of speculation about this vaccine. We think that there's not a mandate from the state. You know, Mississippi is wonderful on our vaccination rates, and it's because we have it written into the law where if you want to go to school, or if you're going to enroll in college, you have to have your MMR vaccine, or you have to have, you know, a different series of sets of shots. But we don't have that in Mississippi law for the HPV vaccine. Now, other countries do. So places like New Zealand and Australia and Scotland and England have very good track records of having their populations vaccinated at preteen age. And what happens is if you're vaccinated as a preteen or as someone who has not had skin-to-skin contact with someone yet, then you can prevent those strains from infecting you. So we think that part of what we're doing with the MPOHC is to try to get people aware that this vaccine works and that it's not as scary as what we've been watching over these past few years, where people are putting a lot of speculation on vaccinations. And we're just going to try to get the word out to people to say, hey, really consider doing this for your kids. And you actually can get this vaccine all the way up until age 45. So we want everybody to get it if they can, because it's so effective in preventing HPV-caused cancers.
Were the rates of vaccination higher before we were introduced to COVID?
I don't believe that they were. So we just traditionally have been the lowest.
Because of the vaccine hesitancy that became very prominent.
Now, there's states on the West Coast that are very, very vaccine hesitant. So you don't see as many people getting the vaccine in Washington State or Oregon or even some parts of California, but their population is so large that it's a bigger number of people that are getting vaccinated. So I don't know. I think that's one of those dirty statistics questions where, you know, they say you can kind of make stats do what you want them to do. but we do not have many people that are getting the vaccine. Part of the reason that we're tackling with the MPOHC is getting all of the providers up to date on this information. So in the dental profession, this is the reason dentistry is so invested in this HPV vaccine. So head and neck cancer is predominantly caused by a particular strain of HPV. And we're seeing that it's actually 70% of head and neck cancers is caused by HPV.
So the virus just goes to that section of the body?
Yes, yes. So it can cause head, neck, esophagus, your throat, any tissue that virus touches, that a particular strain can cause problems. And so when we see it, Desiree, is when people come to us and they're in their fifth and sixth decade of life and they start to complain that they have a sore throat all the time, or they keep coughing and they don't know why. And then we look in their mouth and see, oh my goodness, there's a lesion there. So what we want to do is to get all of the dental profession up to date to say, look, if you recommend this HPV vaccine, we can affect how many people we're going to see 20 years from now with head and neck cancer. So it's part of our responsibility in the dental world, too, to be able to prevent cancer instead of just find it once somebody already has it.
Okay. Dr. Elizabeth Carr, School of Dentistry, University of Mississippi Medical Center. Thank you so much.
It's going to be a really great state if we can have a big decrease in our cancer rates and have healthy people for as long as they can live.
From the Gulf States newsroom, last March, a tornado tore through Rolling Fork. Residents of one mobile home park haven't been able to return. Their story when we come back.
The Radio Reading Service of Mississippi provides print-impaired Mississippians with news, information, and entertainment. To learn more or to see if you qualify, call 601-432-6301.
Listen to MPB Think Radio at 10 on weekday mornings for shows about your legal rights, modern technology, car repair, and other topics of interest. Programs made by Mississippians for Mississippians on MPB Think Radio.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. A year after a deadly tornado tore through Mississippi, residents are struggling to rebuild, especially in Rolling Fork, where many folks died. Danny MacArthur of the Gulf States Newsroom reports on the barriers keeping people in one mobile home community from rebuilding their lives.
Charles Jones is at his job working at an auto shop in Rolling Fork, Mississippi. He takes me back to the night a year ago when the tornado tore through the community. He was with his family when he heard what sounded like hailing.
I looked out the door. I told him, I said, no, it ain't hailing. I said, that's a tornado, and told everybody to get on the floor, and I got on top of them.
Soon, it hit their home.
The house, it went up, it come down. It went up, it come down. The third time I heard the bedroom window blow out, I knew it was over with then.
15 residents of Rolling Fork died. Many lived in a mobile home park located behind Chuck's Dairy Bar, a restaurant that's one of the most iconic places in town. Jones and his family survived, even though their next-door neighbor was killed. But after the tornadoes, residents like Jones found out getting temporary housing for their park was a challenge.
Hello.
Terry Harden has owned that land for more than 15 years.
Yeah, you should be looking at homes back here right now.
We walked through what is now just empty lots after the tornado.
There were 32 homes back here. There was one over here that was the only thing that had any sort of resemblance to a trailer home, a mobile home, and it's mobile home. It was just like the framework. Everything else was rubble, just complete rubble.
Shortly after the storm, she partnered with a company to rebuild the mobile home park. That's when they found out from the city housing inspector that it was a flood zone. Because it's a flood zone, that means the elevation has to be at a certain level. And Harden says it's below it. For months, Harden and others in Rolling Fork tried to get the city to advocate on their behalf for the park to be considered for FEMA temporary housing anyway.
This was the response letter from FEMA.
In it, FEMA officials say they would prioritize commercial sites that could already be used over ones that would require improvement, like Harden's did. And that meant she needed to fix the property before it would be eligible for temporary housing. She says that could cost her anywhere from $200,000 to $400,000, money she doesn't have.
I own the trailer park of the most poverty-stricken people in Rolling Fork. I didn't make very much money.
Situations like this highlight the gaps that exist when it comes to making sure that people who live in mobile homes can recover, according to Andrew Rumbach, a senior fellow at the Urban Institute. It's a nonprofit think tank that does research on social policy. Many mobile homes were developed before modern-day rules about where you could put housing. The park behind Chuck's Dairy Bar was built in the mid-80s. But after a disaster, those modern standards kick in, making it expensive to rebuild.
If you can't make it super affordable, then folks just have to move on, and that's really tough on families.
The impact of this is that a lot of vulnerable people end up permanently displaced. Terry Harden isn't sure what she's going to do with the land now. It was her livelihood. But for the 32 families who lived there before, including Charles Jones, it was their home.
The little community back there, I'd give to them. It was nice back there, you know. It wasn't no rowdy folks. You ain't had to too much worry about no stealing or none of that.
He knew so many of them, including his neighbors who died.
No, there were some good people back there. You know, you kind of miss them when you sit up and think about them.
After the tornado, like I say, his family and several others stayed in a motel as they looked for more permanent places to stay. Jones wishes the town fought harder for the mobile home park to come back.
So, you know, if they had let the folk put houses back there, a lot of folk would have been out the motel sooner.
While everyone is in homes now, they're scattered. Some are staying in other towns. And throughout the region, many communities are still working to bring their displaced residents back. Like neighboring Silver City, which was also in the direct path of that tornado. People gathered at a church there on the one-year anniversary of the storm.
He performed on a mother, too, just like he did way back then. And do the same for me and you. Let me tell you, old time God, yes, he is.
Jones finally managed to find a new home in Rolling Fork. A friend offered to rent him a lot, and that's where he's staying now. He got a free mobile home thanks to a nonprofit. And in early March, he was finally able to move in. For the Gulf States Newsroom, I'm Danny MacArthur in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Praise the Lord!
The Gulf States Newsroom is a partnership between Mississippi Public Broadcasting and public radio stations in Alabama and Louisiana. Coming up, the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Maryland has mayors along the Mississippi River calling for infrastructure inspections. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
AutoCorrect on MPB Think Radio, helping you correct your auto problems. Our host is Coach Charlie Milton, ASC Certified Master Technician.
Let me help save you some money working on your cars. Listen to our podcast, AutoCorrect.
Thank you for your sustaining financial support of Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Mayors from cities along the Mississippi River are calling for better port and transit infrastructure along the waterway. And last week, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland, was struck by a cargo ship and collapsed, killing six people. Despite the bridge being rated in fair condition last June, officials say the weight of the barge was too much for the bridge to handle. There is a renewed sense of caution and concern for major waterways and bridges. Members of the Mississippi River and Towns Initiative say it's time to assess what could be done to prevent a bridge collapse along the river in Mississippi and beyond. Among the coalition members, Vicksburg Mayor George Flags. He tells our Will Stribling safety needs to be a top priority.
We already on the Mississippi River had been allocated about $40 billion, that's a B, to build for a construction or infrastructure bill that will pass. What I think Louisiana, Illinois, and Mississippi was the three states that was in it. But what we were trying to suggest to Congress that we highly look at the reassessment and at risk of those things and a risk assessment so that we can determine. Now, we know that we can't do a risk assessment on all bridges, but those bridges that are impacted by those type of traffic, we need to look at it in a way that, you know, we can determine some metric or some means, determine whether or not, when do we do assessment and when we not do assessment.
Yeah. Do you think that an assessment needs to be done on the Vicksburg Bridge?
Well, I don't know at this time because what we have in Vicksburg is what we have. We do testing, and the Coast Guard is pretty much ahead of that. And we have a bridge in Vicksburg. We have a bridge commission, and that commission determines the bridge and its condition, especially on the old bridge. But we were just trying to show and raise the awareness that from Greenville to Vicksburg, it's about 151 miles or 56 miles between the two that cross the Mississippi River. And we had to be very careful with how we look at that and how we determine how it's going to impact us. But what this bridge, Francis Key, did for the world is put us all on notice. It put us on notice that anything can happen at any given time. And what we have to do is to wait on the data that comes off of this and determine where we go next. My thing is that we shouldn't rush into any judgment or anything and see what it is and not try to spread any blame, but make sure this should never happen again.
You said y'all, listen to the experts. What have they been saying about what needs to be done?
They highly recommend that we start looking at a risk assessment, so that we can predetermine these type things. And we need to start back looking at how these currents affect the boat traffic.
Because of what happened in Baltimore, y'all do expect traffic on the river to increase?
Absolutely. And at the same time, we have to be prepared for that traffic increase because it may take as much as 5 years to rebuild that.
You've been the mayor of Vicksburg for a long time. Can you just talk a bit about how critical being on the river is for the city's economy and, how important that the boat traffic and right. cargo is?
Well, cargo traffic is very important. It's one of our greatest means of economic development, economic prosperity. But at the same time, we inspect and we kind of govern the traffic on the Mississippi River a lot. We have a area just right before you get to the first bridge going south of very deep, turbulent. And what it does is if the water is high, it causes barges, and you know, there's free flow barges, to kind of get away from you. It's not unusual for a barge to hit the Mississippi River Bridge. I'm going to make that clear. We've had them, and we will continue to have them based upon that current in the Mississippi River.
More than $1 trillion in goods travel along the Mississippi River every year. Between 1960 and 2015, approximately 35 major bridges collapsed due to a ship or barge collision worldwide. That's according to a report from the World Association of Waterborne Transport Infrastructure. Next, the National NAACP is honoring a Mississippi woman for her part in holding the Rankin County Goon Squad accountable. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
If you aren't near a radio, you can still listen to MPB Think Radio and MPB Music Radio. You can download the MPB Public Media app for your smartphone or listen online at mpbonline.org.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Six former law enforcement officers are being held accountable for their violent attack on two black men in Rankin County. That is thanks in part to the efforts of a local civil rights activist. Angela English is president of the Rankin County branch of the NAACP. She led the charge in calling for justice and is now being recognized as Activist of the Year at the 55th Annual NAACP Image Awards. English speaks with our Mike McEwen outside of the federal courthouse in Jackson when the former officers were sentenced. She says the work isn't done.
This culture of racial discrimination didn't just start with the Goon Squad. We had sheriffs that perpetuated this kind of behavior that you're seeing in the Rankin County Sheriff's Department. Before Brian Bailey, he has just continued the culture. We are not surprised at all about what we are seeing, but we're disappointed because this is 2024. Not 1964, not 1954, not 1944, 2024. So we are very disappointed that we are still fighting the same fight against racial discrimination. So I can't let this continue on my watch. While I'm here, president of Rankin County NAACP, I'm not going to let anything go undone. If they cause someone bodily harm, they take away their rights, then we are going to fight for them, and we are going to make sure that they get the same treatment that these Goon Squad got. And these six men are not the only members of the Goon Squad. These five Rankin County members, I should say, sheriff's deputies, are not the only members of the Goon Squad. It's been said in court that night shift that they were on, that was the Middleton Goon Squad, the whole night shift. So there are others out there. And so what we're sending is a message, I hope. What Judge Lee has done is shown that you will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, and we will go after you.
What do you think it would take for Brian Bailey to no longer be sheriff in Rankin County? You know, it's fair to assume when the officers pled guilty, that might have done it, but he ran unopposed. It's fair to assume that now that they're being sentenced and even more details about, I guess, the power structure of the Goon Squad within the Sheriff's Department, that's all coming out in court, and it still seems like he's holding on. What do you think it would take, if not for him to step down, then for the Rankin County government?
We have to have these petitions, 30% of the registered voters to sign the petition for his removal, and then it goes from there to the governor's office. So we expect once we get them that Governor Tate Reeves will do the right thing, seeing as how he's a native Rankin Countyan himself, so to speak, my homeboy, because we're both from Florence, Mississippi. So we expect him to do the right thing once he receives these petitions. At the rate it's going, though, I would like to say stay tuned. I can see further indictments coming down the line, and I'm just going to leave it right there.
Angela English is president of the Rankin County chapter of the NAACP. The national office has named her Activist of the Year. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.